Welcome to O2 Coaching's Empower Your Team podcast series with your host, Chloe Caron, founder and president of O2 Coaching. As an executive coach, author, businesswoman, thought leader, and speaker with more than 20 years of experience, Chloe's USC, her unique strategic contribution, is to create a new generation of inspiring and inspired leaders by positively impacting the lives of 1 million leaders through her webinars, conferences, books, and podcasts. In this podcast series, Chloe and her guests will take you on a journey, sharing their leadership stories, struggles, successes, and learnings. The conversations will highlight practical advice and insights for leaders. Be sure to share your thoughts on this podcast series on our LinkedIn or Facebook pages. Enjoy this podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to my Empower Your Team podcast. This is Chloe Caron. Last week, we had a great conversation with Sarah Leclerc, Global Marketing Director at GSK. We talked about creating a coaching culture. You know how passionate I am about this. I've always been, and I think nowadays it's even more important because I've talked to a lot of organizations that want to create more engagement, want to create more innovation, more accountability. And everywhere I look, the only real recipe for this in my mind as leaders is really creating a coaching culture where we empower our people, where we give them the authority to make those decisions that can bring the organization further. And so I really urge you to listen to our conversation with Sarah. As always, you will learn a ton. This week, we have a great conversation as well with Caroline Cadzi. Caroline, you know her. She's the founder of La Gouvernance au Féminin, Women in Governance. They're actually celebrating 10 years anniversary. This is really great. And I'm sure, just like me, you're seeing a big difference. Diversity is on everybody's mind. And obviously, women leadership is not the only topic for diversity. There's so many more, but that's obviously an important one. We see women like Nadia Theodore, Olga Furman, Patricia Gauthier, Paula Cruikshank, Mara Harvey, Kathy Cunningham, Julia Cirillo, Catherine Sanson, Jennifer Cook, Marie-Chantal Lortie, Ruth Vachon, so many more. Kim Thomasin, Geneviève Fortier, Nathalie Forcier, Christine Maestracci, Dina Raphael, Natalie Brown, Brigitte Hébert, Joanne Brunet. And I know with this list, I'm missing a ton more women, and I wish I could name you all. But I just want us to realize how many more women there are in leadership position. And obviously, the last one on the list is Kamala Harris, most probably one of the most powerful women in the world now. And so this is a great environment. And actually, Caroline Cadzi says, we're asking men and women to be able to recognize each other's strengths and being able to work together to better resolve problems, come up with best decision and bring innovation. Countries and organizations that manage with diversity are already stronger. I believe we are actually seeing a historic shift in the presence of women in leadership roles at upper levels and boards. It's about time. And ladies and gentlemen, I so agree with this. So have a good listen. And as always, be inspired and inspire. Welcome to our podcast. Today, I have the pleasure of inviting and conversing with Caroline Cadzi, our president and founder of La Gouvernance au Féminin, or Women in Governance. Caroline, welcome.
Thank you, Chloe. It's a pleasure to be here.
And this is an important year for you because I'll get to your bio in a minute, but Women in Governance has 10 years this year.
Exactly. It's our 10th year anniversary. It's a little bit out of the ordinary, 2020 for everyone, yeah. But we're trying to make the best of it. And it's a fantastic time for female leadership and leadership development as a whole. So we're very excited. Lots going on and lots more to come.
And that's our topic today, actually, woman leadership or leadership for women, depending on how you want to present this. And nobody better than you to be at this mic to have this discussion. You've been
you really impressed me, you know, because you've had such a great career. You've had senior position in organizations. You've launched Women in in Governance. You've graduated from two important universities. You've lived in three different continents. You speak four languages and you understand six others. Like, you really impressed me. And I wanted to start on a personal note because I saw a video that you shared yesterday, because you were born in Lebanon, and the past couple of weeks have been crazy.
Very difficult period, absolutely. I have relived a lot of the things that I went through during my childhood, my teenage years, growing up in the Lebanese Civil War. So it's really hard to see what, you know, kind of struggles this country is still undergoing 30 years later, you know, 30 years after the war officially ended. We're still, you know, maybe even worse off. So yes, it's been a difficult time.
And yet, every time I speak with you, every time I interact with you, every time I see you, it seems that there's some light, super extra powerful light within you. Where do you get that?
Well, you know, it might sound contradictory, but probably from those difficult times that I've lived through and grown up, you know, all these years growing up in a difficult situation. You know, you never know how strong you are until you have no other choice. And I strongly believe that, you know, gratitude and, you know, your optimism, your positivism, all of that, you know, comes from within you. But there's a few other factors, you know, from the life that you may have lived, from the parents that you have had, from the education that you were given. And if, you know, anybody I've met always says, oh, I have a Lebanese friend. And people usually say, oh, they're so positive. They're always enthusiastic. They're always smiling. And it does seem contradictory. But I really think that when you've lost your country so many times, when your city was destroyed so many times, and you've rebuilt it time and time again, and you've had all the hope that come with it, and you've never lost sight of hope. And that's, I think, key and instrumental, even these days where everything seems so gloomy over there. And then the gratitude of being in a peaceful country, secure. I wouldn't say completely equal at every level, because that's exactly what I'm working against, is the inequalities that we have in our society. But, you know, we can say that we live in a just society. We're extremely fortunate. And I think about it every day of how fortunate I am to be living here and to have every opportunity to make a good life for myself. So, of course, there's something to celebrate. Of course, there's, you know, wanting to remain positive, because if you know, you can focus on all the difficult things in your life, or you can focus on all the amazing, wonderful things that you've had. And that your bad fortune has turned into good fortune. Yeah. So I honestly think that this is what's given me, you know, the perseverance, the strength, the courage of coming out of my comfort zone. I had no other choice. And it's shaped me into the leader that I am today.
And thank you for reminding us of gratitude, because I couldn't agree with you more. If you're alive today, regardless of your situation, there's stuff to be grateful for. And if you get to lead people, which is our audience, if you get to lead people, you get to be the best version of yourself. And that's, I think you're such a great representation of that. So you spoke about equality, diversity, obviously being the president of Women in Governance. I'm curious to know what got you to that place where you said, okay, enough is enough. I'm going to do something. What got you to that place?
Well, Chloe, it came from my own career, my own experience. I'm moving up the ladder in corporate Canada. I've been here for 30 years, and I came to Canada with very high expectations in terms of equality. I worked my way up the ladder. I worked hard. I worked fast. I had a lot of ambition. And I would say that one of the things that maybe set me apart from other women is that I didn't have these self-imposed obstacles of either thinking that, you know, you're never going to be able to make it, or it's a difficult world, it's a man's world, or I'm not good enough, I'm not, self-confident, I'm an imposter. These are elements that are very Western. Women here have been brought up feeling this way. And I think coming into Canada, I didn't have any, how can I put it? I didn't have preset conceptions or misconceptions of what a woman can or cannot do. To me, it was evident that I could do anything a man could do, and sometimes even better. And of course, often better when we're working together, women and men. To me, this is extremely important, the complementarity of male and female talents. And just moving up the ranks with the conviction that if I worked hard and I was vocal and I was visible and I was very bold in my intentions, I was going to make it. And so I moved up to director and vice president, regional, national, executive vice president. And as I was moving up the ladder, I realized that there were very few women at the top, that for any important decision, any important meeting, I was often the only woman at the table. And I thought of all the women who had graduated with me and all the women who were entering the workforce with me, and where were they? Why were they stuck a few levels below? I couldn't understand. And this is the time where I started doing some research. That would be about now 11 or 12 years ago when I started getting sensitized about the issue. And I went and took some governance courses. I was interested in sitting on boards, and I realized there were so few women on boards. And I wanted to know what the root cause was, what the reality across Canada was, across the world. And this is when I realized how shocking the situation was, whether it's in the U.S., whether it's in Canada. In Europe, there's a bit of improvement thanks to legislation. But it was, to me, completely striking. And, you know, go back to 2010, the conversation was already started, but it was a lot less vibrant than today. And I decided that it was important to start talking about it. So I wanted to gather a few women, like-minded women, ambitious women who wanted to make a difference. And I said, listen, I'm going to organize an event, like a snack-a-set, a happy hour. Let's all go to a hotel lobby and go to a bar or go somewhere where we can just chat about what we want to achieve and how we're going to do it. And it just went viral, and I had 150 women confirming their attendance to the very first event.
The first time?
May 3rd, 2010.
The first time. Wow.
So I was shocked. I thought, oh my God, what am I going to do? The news was clearly there. Yeah. And so I said, okay, wait, I need to find a hall that can take 150 women. I can't, just have you sit at a hotel bar. This is, my plan was 20, 25 women tops. I never thought 150 would show up. And this is when Women in Governance was born. And I had no original plan, no initial plan to launch an organization. I just wanted to talk with other like-minded women. And then it just became a thing. It got a life of its own. People were suggesting, even the name, La Gouvernance Féminine, Women in Governance, wasn't even my idea. People were throwing ideas at me and then saying, why don't you call it this? Why don't we meet quarterly? Why don't we pick topics? And I thought, okay, that's a little bit more work than I gambled for. But then very quickly, I decided that this was extremely important to me because I could see the value that these women were gaining from coming to these events. I was receiving testimonies of women thanking me because they had the audacity and the courage to ask for a promotion and the salary that goes with it, extremely important. And to me, that was the most rewarding thing that I've ever done, to feel that there are women in Montreal, in Quebec, in Canada, and now globally that have been impacted by my message of wanting to attain roles in decision-making bodies, getting jobs in male-dominated fields. I would have never dreamt that I could one day have such an impact. And then I built a big team around me of amazing people who've been unbelievable contributors to make things happen in a very concrete fashion. And I'm guessing, I don't want to go too fast, I'm guessing we'll talk about that maybe a little bit later, but there's a lot of very clear things that can be done for organizations to allow women to progress with no sticky floors and no glass ceilings.
We'll get to that. I'm as I'm listening to you, I'm curious to hear you on what you notice in terms of leadership in women. Like, what do you feel really brings out the best in women in terms of leaders?
Well, you know, a lot of people will tell you, oh, there's no difference. A male leader, a female leader, there's no difference. They find it almost offensive that you would say that they have different leadership styles. I don't agree that there are no differences. There are huge differences, and it's okay. We are absolutely not asking women to behave like men or men to behave like women. We're just asking men and women to be able to recognize each other's strengths mm-hmm. and to be able to work together, amplifying, you know, the interests of each person, the strengths, the interests, the objectives, and together, it's the best way to resolve any problem, to come up with the most robust decision, the most innovation. It's together. So to me, the key differences that you would see, the advantages that women have over men is their empathy, their ability to be very active listeners, their very democratic way of leading a team, listening to everyone, recognizing everybody's contribution, not taking credit for other people's achievements. So very attuned and also very in sync with the group in terms of the group's needs, putting the group's needs before your own needs. That is what, you know, some of the key characteristics that women bring. But they do have some, I would say, flaws that they need to work on and where they could learn from men. For instance, in terms of networking, men are much smarter networkers than women are. They know how to ask. They know how to give. They know how to, you know, make sure that a relationship is a win-win. Women will tend to, not dare ask. They'll be givers, but they don't dare ask for help. Men are very comfortable asking for help. So I think it's extremely important that you realize that your network, once you've demonstrated that you're a giver, they're also there to give back.
Well, I just wanted to kind of highlight what you just said, because I think men are more comfortable with asking because they live better with being said no to, where women, because of our desire to being perfect, find it harder to being said no to. Is that what you notice as well?
Well, that's true. And it's also why men tend to be better in business development than women. Mm-hmm. Women take things personally, whereas men are more relaxed about certain things. And I'm saying that as myself, having been in business development for so many years and having huge success. But that's because I adopted a lot of the male characteristics in my ways of interacting and doing business. The other thing where women tend, you know, you mentioned wanting to be perfect. When women are so focused on the task and the content of what they're doing and not enough on showcasing their good work and their successes, they think that people are going to notice. They think that, you know, their boss will think of them when a promotion comes up. And then they're very disappointed when it actually goes to John, Bob, or Harry, who didn't work as hard on the project, who wasn't as instrumental in the project's success, but was very vocal about his contribution, very vocal about the good completion of the project. So people tend to think, oh, it's thanks to him. He was good at making things happen. And the potential, you know, new boss would say, you know, I want to promote you into my department. Or, you know, whereas the woman who would hope to get a promotion is stuck in her office, doing more homework, doing more, crossing more T's and dotting more I's, and it's really not necessary. It's extremely important to be with your team, with your colleagues, with your bosses. It's more complicated in COVID days, of course, but to be in the corridors, to exchanging with others and talking about your achievements and not being shy. Women too often tend to, first of all, underestimate their accomplishments. Mm-hmm. And second of all, they're not comfortable talking about it because they feel that it's bragging. And, it's a big mistake. They need to talk about what they do and to be proud. And they need to amplify each other's work as well. They need to elevate each other. So yeah. If you're shy to talk about your own accomplishments, I could say, Chloe did this amazing presentation. I was so impressed with what she was sharing with her audience, blah, blah, blah. Because maybe Chloe's not going to do it herself. And then Chloe can say, oh, I saw Caroline at this conference and I heard her speak and wow. And so this is something that we need to do more. Feminine solidarity, talk about each other, amplify our voices as well.
And celebrating our success. And I think to your point, women not being comfortable praising themselves, if you will, or not actually focusing on what's most strategic. It's actually what drove
exactly
me to create the concept of USC that you found in the book, Empower Your Team, Your Unique Strategic Contribution, because I found that women, to your point, tend to focus on the checklist, the I need to get things done rather than the impact that you want to have. And so with that tool, I found that women were more focused on what does make an impact and being able to discriminate, to say, no, I'm not going to do that because it's just another to-do, it's just another task, and it does not bring me further, closer to where I want to go and the impact that I want to have. So I really want to say thank you for raising that, because for me, that's the pivotal shift that women need to have, to make, if they want to be the best.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you see that at school as well, right? At university, women are 60% of university graduates. They actually have better marks than the men. They do better because they work so hard and they want to get the good grades. And then it doesn't translate into the working life. They go into corporations where they think that they need to continue to get the best marks. And they don't realize the whole political game. They don't realize that if you're, in your office, working away while others are going for drinks after work and you don't participate. And it doesn't have to be drinks after work because, of course, women are also taken by all the chores at home and the children, et cetera. But there are other ways to interact. It could be at lunchtime. It could be at breakfast. It could be during the corridors, at the water cooler. And you just need to know what to say and who to say it to and when. To get better known with your executive management team, that's extremely important. And a quick segue into the work-life balance, women also need to learn to share what's going on at home. And if you are not going to recognize the fact that you are two parents to a child or two children, then it's on you. If you're not able to tell your spouse, listen, I picked up kids at daycare, 3 days this week, the other 2 days are on you, or all of next week is on you, then it's your problem. So to me, it's extremely key. And I'm talking as a single mom, although now my kids are adults and have left the home. I'm
beautiful kids, by the way. Beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much. I feel very fortunate that they're both so successful, and it's not just professional success, but also very well surrounded, good friends, good values, extremely involved in the community. All that is key to me. And I can tell you one thing, Chloe, is that I've achieved this with a father of theirs who was living in France. So being able, it's not even juggling, it's just doing it all. But at a very young age, I've empowered them to, learn how to go to the grocery store, cook, be on your own, watch TV, do your homework. I've done my homework when I was a kid. It's not my homework. I'm your mother. I don't have time to be after you. And it's your life. I'm giving you the right values. I'm giving you, ambition. And it's up to you to succeed after that. And a lot of women feel that they are failing their children if they're not behind them all the time. But in my case, because of the type of life that I was leading and all the work that I had, there were very few evenings where I was actually having dinner at home with my children during the week. But that resulted in an extreme closeness, in the sense that, you know, they knew that the time that they had with me was very precious. And when I came home, well, they would drop everything to be with me, talking, exchanging, asking me questions, sharing. And I see families that are at home every single night and nobody talks and it's so gloomy. And as soon as they're done, everybody goes back to their bedrooms. So that's not the life that I had. So I think it's important to understand the difference between quality and quantity. And I picked quality and it worked. But listen, I'm not saying that it's a one size fits all. I'm not saying that it's going to work for anybody. And I'm not saying that I did the right thing, but I'm saying that it worked for me and that it certainly is worth trying. Sometimes we feel, you know, because we're very good at that, women. We're very good at feeling, how do you say in English?
Coupable. Guilty.
Guilty, exactly. Feeling guilty. And other people are also extremely good at making you feel guilty. Oh, you're out again. You're at a gala again. What about your children? And you have to be very strong not to listen to these voices and to think to yourself, listen, I know I'm doing the right thing because I do spend enough quality time with them and I trust them and I talk to them and I text them several times a day and I know exactly what they're doing. And once you know that they're well surrounded, that their friends are people that you're comfortable with, that they're extremely involved in sports. I mean, my daughter was a AAA soccer player. You know, they're usually high achievers, right? My son was a hockey goalie. And when you see that they're extremely involved in so many things and involved in the community, they came to, you know, with me to, I was a spokesperson for the Salvation Army for 5 years. I was on the board of the Missing Children's Network for 5 years. I've been involved in so many different organizations like the Canadian Cancer Society, the Death of Ball, the Le Chénon. I mean, I'm not going to name them all because I'm going to, Le Conservatoire de Musique et d'Art Dramatique. I'm not going to name them all because I'm going to forget some. But, you know, I would bring my kids with me so that they see exactly why it is that I choose to get involved in these organizations. And now they're themselves involved. So, you know, I feel that I've done the right thing to have capable and involved adults in our society.
And it's interesting because it's actually a lesson in leadership that you've just given us, which is hold your team, hold your kids accountable for being human beings that can achieve, that have all the resources within them to achieve and be the people that they need to be. So great lesson in terms of leadership. I'm curious to hear you on how do you think COVID, because you said the women, they're busy with the chores, but you're inviting us to think differently. I'm curious to hear you on how do you think COVID has changed that for parents, for men and women?
Well, we're realizing, I guess we're realizing more than ever, how there is a huge disproportion between the number of hours that women dedicate to the house and to the children, a huge disproportion relative to what men put in. So for some men, working at home with their children around them led them to realize the immense work that their wives have been pulling off for so long. Mm-hmm. But for others, it's just same old, same old. So they continue to think that, you know, the children are in the way, it's up to their wife to take them away and take care of them and entertain them and do the homework. But she has a job as well. So we're seeing a huge number of women. First of all, this pandemic has caused a huge female job loss, mm-hmm. which is very worrying because it just tells us that the old boys club is still alive and kicking, because they will tend to want to still be surrounded by people who look like them, think like them, dress like them. And it's more natural for them to choose to keep the male rather than the female leader in a job. But also women are themselves choosing to leave jobs because they can't cope anymore. So they're taking sabbaticals. And we're seeing a ton of that. And that is extremely concerning to me in a context of female pipeline of talent. So these women are going to lose track. They're going to come back. It's going to be very hard to, you know, gain traction again. So it's disconcerting. I really hope that women realize that even, you know, if you're at home with your children and your husband, there's no reason that you do more than him. It needs to be fair. But women still do 2 to 3 times more chores than their husbands do, or more time with the kids. There was a Fortune article, I can't remember if it was Forbes or Fortune article, that came out that said that the next generation was actually much more involved with the kids. So great news for the next generation. But the article concluded by saying, but unfortunately, they still don't make the dishes. So there's still a long way to go, even with the new generation. Yeah.
So you mentioned earlier that there are things that can be done. If I'm a leader in an organization, I can do something. There's things to be done in order to create that equality, that diversity. We're talking about women today, but there's more to that, obviously. But in the case of equality and diversity with women and men, what are your top 3 things that organizations should be doing?
Well, to start with, there's one tool, obviously, for me, it seems to be evident that every organization should do Women in Governance's parity certification. So it might sound like it's self-serving, but I'll tell you a bit more about what it, you know, what its goal is and the success that we've had with this. First of all, we built it 4 years ago with the pro bono support of McKinsey and Company. So it's not just a nonprofit organization that has improvised something to, you know, for marketing or branding purposes for organizations to showcase. We're far from that. We're into the very concrete and very real ways of closing the gender gap in the workplace. We've got 62, 65 organizations, I think, so far enrolled in 2020, and they're all major organizations, okay? So the banks, the insurance companies, the telecom, mining companies, IT, a lot of government bodies as well, have enrolled. So organizations are very vocal about female leadership and diversity, and actually the role of chief diversity and inclusion officer is the job that is the most researched by headhunters these days. So that just is a testament of how organizations are understanding the value and the importance of having a good D&I, diversity and inclusion strategy. So why? Why is it important to have a good D&I strategy? Because you cannot just keep having organizations that were built by men for men and expecting it, the organization, to still flourish in a society where diversity is key. So women are 51% of the population, but if we widen that, there's also women that are even further discriminated against. Relative to white women, so Black women, Indigenous women, LGBTQ, et cetera. So we've worked with organizations that have been, that have always been vocal about the importance of female leadership, and they just say, "Oh, but we don't understand. Why is it that women don't reach the top? Everything is in place for them to succeed." And then you start asking them questions, and you realize that they've actually never measured some very basic elements. So they're just talking. They're just saying that women are not being able to attain certain goals. And they've never taken the time to measure their recruiting, attraction, retention, promotion, compensation, mentoring, sponsoring, all the initiatives that actually close the gender gap in the workplace. They've never even measured them. So if you don't know how big your gap is, how can you work on your gap? How can you find the solutions, the appropriate solutions to attain your objective? So this is where organizations need to begin. And the parity certification actually guides them on their path towards parity, because they will be asked a series of questions online, about 80 questions on the platform, that will, you know,
help them.
Sometimes make them panic at first, because they'll realize, oh my God, we've never measured this. We'll ask for certain policies and they think, oh my God, we don't have that policy. Let's create it. And then we'll support them in building that environment that will allow them to attract and retain a top female talent. And at every level, we're not just measuring the decision-making bodies. You're measuring from the entry level, because an organization where women enter, young women come in and they look at the top and they see that there are only white men. Well, what ambition is that going to give them to make it to the top? Whereas when they see that there is female leadership at the top, and when they see that there are efforts that are deployed by the organization, then they will be engaged and they will stay. So I guess in a nutshell, that's the path that organizations need to follow. And then year after year, they need to do the exercise again and compare themselves to the cohort, to other organizations, benchmarking, and compare themselves to the previous year. And what we've seen in our experience at Chloe in the past 4 years is that some organizations have progressed so much that they went from the bronze level all the way to platinum, because every year they implemented more of the strategies that we were recommending, the policies, the initiatives, and that actually concretely moved the needle. But today's platinum is not tomorrow's platinum. So every year we add criteria, we add, like for instance, this year we've added intersectionality, which is the whole aspect of the diversity, diverse women, so women of diverse origins, backgrounds, cultures, religions, sexual orientation, et cetera. So every year there's something new, and we work with our consulting partners, McKinsey & Company, with Mercer and Willis Towers Watson, to make sure that we are always completely up to date in terms of the different elements that we measure. So that's in a nutshell what to me is concrete action to close the gender gap in the workplace.
Yeah, and this is, as you say, very concrete and very structured. So in terms of being able to track progress, you've got all the tools to do that, which sometimes when you initiate something new in a company, you lack that progression measurement, and then people stop doing it, where in this case, you'll have the measurement, which is fantastic.
That's right.
We're at the end of our time together. I feel like we could speak more and more. Perhaps we'll get another chance to do that another time as well. But I'm curious, in our last couple of seconds, minutes, to hear you on questions that I ask all of our people that come to speak with us, which is, what's one tip to empower your team that you would give a leader? One tip to empower your team.
Well, I think the most important thing when you're leading a team is to be able to call on each person's different perspectives, which is why diversity is so important. So every time that there is an important decision to make, we have our team meetings twice a week. I always say, this is what I'm thinking of. I want to do this, but what do you think? And I implement some of the ideas that were shared during these meetings. Sometimes they're valid. Sometimes there are some of the aspects of the idea that are interesting. But everybody feels empowered that they are playing an active role in the organization. So it doesn't mean that sometimes I don't just have to have a more drastic tone and say, listen, this is what I've decided and this is what we're going to do, because sometimes leaders, especially during crisis, have to be very
directive.
Bold in their decisions. Yeah. Directive, exactly. And of course, you know, when there are women, and there are teams that don't take it as well as when it's men that are directive. So it's an additional dimension that we need to deal with, but that's how it is. There's still a lot of unconscious bias around us. But that, I think, is probably the most, what has been very successful for me in all my years in leadership, is to give everyone a voice, and including, you know, your receptionist or your secretary, because you'd be surprised. Sometimes it's, you know, very fresh ideas that you hadn't thought of, because they have a very different point of view, very different perspective. To me, this is one of the tips that I'd like to share today.
What is one piece of advice you would give a leader who wants to raise their game?
I think that branding is extremely important. If you are good at what you do and nobody knows that you're good at what you do, you are not going to be able to advance your career as fast. So if you're seen as a rainmaker, if you are seen as someone who makes a difference within the organization, within society, with et cetera, everybody's going to want to be around you. So your branding, and obviously that's going to increase your networking, because when people know you more, they are drawn to you. And especially at times where social media are playing such an important role, and it's free, it's easy. You just need to pick a topic, become a subject matter expert, be vocal, share information online, and you're going to have people following you. And, you know, it's not just wanting to build followers, you want to build leaders. And this is how you do it, getting known for something.
If you had to summarize leadership in three words, what would they be?
Courage, perseverance, and I would say empathy.
I think you represent those three words very well. Caroline, thank you so much for your
time.
You're
so kind.
No, thank you. And I really hope we can get to do this another time as well.
Well, thank you so much, Chloe. And thank you for all that you do supporting women in governance with our virtual mentoring program. It's extremely appreciated. We need more people like you who are generous and have great ideas to empower women and help them get to their next step in their career.
Thank you. Amen.
Thanks for listening to this Empower Your Team podcast. We hope you've enjoyed it and can take away powerful tools and ideas. For more free content, events, and development tools, visit our website at empoweryourteam.com or on our LinkedIn or Facebook pages. And be sure to sign up for our newsletter to continue receiving Empower Your Team content and insights.